This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
How are you? How's everything been going? Congratulations on winning that competition. I had, what was her name again? I'm so sorry.
Alexia.
Alexia, when she emailed me the stuff, I went and did it. And then you could see kind of like where you were like in second. And I was like, ah, yeah. Inshallah, like she gets it. And then I saw you post and I was like, oh, that's so exciting. I was so happy for you.
Thank you so much. We seriously appreciate like all of your support. We needed every single vote. We were so close. So
yeah, it was a very tight race. So we're just going to like jump right in. Can you tell us just a little bit about yourself, like personal background, especially because one of the things that, you know, obviously I was really surprised to learn when we spoke is like the background that you have to go into skincare. And then, yeah, just like the background of Flora and Noor and of course, talking about, you know, what's coming up.
Of course. Okay. So my background is in chemistry. So I actually went to college for pharmacy to be a pharmacist. So I went to college, majored in chemistry, pre-med with a pharmacy concentration. And then actually afterwards, I was interning at Walgreens as a pharmacist because you have to do like your internship credits and all of that. And actually our pharmacy manager, he said to me, like, Jordan, I feel like your personality, like you're going to end up hating this. Like you're going to end up hating sitting behind this counter for the rest of your life, similar to the way that I feel. And I would love for you to talk to my wife about like what she's doing in pharmaceuticals. It was like, I would love to do that. I had no idea that your wife was like, and like, the drug pharmaceutical aspect of pharma, whereas we're obviously in the, you know, consumer aspect of pharma. So I was like, sure, I'd love to talk to her. And then at the time she worked for Allergan and we hit it off. She was like, okay, I have this position for you. And so in the beginning stages of my career, I worked as a research chemist. And then I moved on to pharma, but also medical device consulting. But I think most of my experience or love for what I did was when I was working with pharmaceutical skincare for the likes of like Botox and SkinCeuticals. And I mean, I love to see, you know, patients yield efficacious results because a lot of times with those products, you'll see results, right? Like instantly with like Botox and things like that. And then of course, like SkinCeuticals, actives take like a certain amount of time to work. So you might see from like 2 weeks to maybe even 12 weeks to see results, but you will see results with those products. And so I just thought to myself, like at the time I was just using skincare. I was using any kind of skincare that I liked. But I did realize that none of these products, were halal, they weren't vegan, they weren't cruelty-free, they weren't any of these things. And I did feel bad about it. I feel like a lot of us have done that before, like we use skincare and we either act like we don't know what is in the ingredients or we won't look at the ingredients. And so we'll be like, yeah.
Ignorance is bliss.
Exactly. And I was feeling terrible about it. And I was just like, you know what? I can create something like this. Obviously it was like my knowledge. Like I'm the expert at all of this. I'm the one who is like educating the dermatologists, the estheticians and the doctors about, you know, the mechanism of action of these different ingredients and formulations. So I can do this. I can, you know, create and formulate, you know, conscious skincare that everybody can feel proud to use. Because I think the big thing for me was that I didn't feel proud to use what I was using. I truly did feel bad about it. Mm-hmm. And I actually felt bad that I was talking to and educating people about skincare that I couldn't even use really, like, in good conscience. And then also telling them to use it as well. And so I decided, let's do this. And I to be honest with you, I found it very, very strange that there were not any other, you know, halal certified skincare brands that were actually based in the US. Now, of course, there are some that exist that, you know, we can purchase on Amazon or elsewhere, but they're not based in the US. The rest of the world is way ahead of us here. And also a lot of them contain like bleaching and whitening ingredients that I don't want to use. And I know, like, you know, some people, that's what they're looking to do, but I really want to like encourage our melanin that we have, be proud of that. And I want to be able to tackle our skin concerns without having to, you know, have bleach or whiten any of our skin as well. And so that is why and how I created Flora & Lure.
I love that. I think, you know, we had talked, I think last time in our last conversation, we were talking about that bleaching aspect, because you had mentioned that different parts of the world have halal certified skincare. Are those Muslim owned? Are they like in Muslim countries? Because I know that there's this really trendy thing that's been happening forever in like the Middle East and like the Desi community, where, you know, the bleaching aspect is almost like the primary thing that people look for in skincare, is like, is it going to lie in my skin? And this is different than, you know, dealing with hyperpigmentation or like scars. This is like literal skin bleaching for the face and body to reduce, like you said, melanin, and to basically, and there's, we can really go into like the European beauty standards that was like influenced there and whatnot, but there is, I'm assuming there's halal certified because there's Muslim, you know, majority countries, or I think you had also mentioned the UK, but is there a big market that exists that removes itself from, you know, that kind of toxic?
Yeah. So for halal certified products that have bleaching ingredients, this is actually very popular all over Asia, Africa, and the Middle East. And specifically in my experience, because I have family in Egypt, I have had a very, very difficult time not finding skincare that doesn't have some sort of like bleaching or whitening ingredients. And it's interesting because people are wanting these bleaching and whitening ingredients that, you know, from my point of view, would not even be considered like dark in complexion. Mm-hmm. But because of these European beauty standards, a lot of people in the Middle East, Africa, and Asia, you know, this is what they want to, you know, accomplish, look like, or what they. And so I, even though obviously our main concern right now, as we're based in the US, is to make sure that the people here have access to halal certified skincare, because we just truly don't. But we are truly like a global and international brand. And it's also very important to me that, you know, people in Africa, the Middle East, and Asia also are able to use products that don't have to whiten our skin, because a product can be halal certified and still have whitening ingredients. And it's interesting, kind of, you know, being halal certified, a lot of people think, oh, if it's vegan, it's halal. If it's cruelty free, then it's halal. But not necessarily. For example, like beeswax, we can use beeswax. Like beeswax is halal, no issue. But cruelty, it's not cruelty free. So these things, though some things are similar, they're not the same. And so it is important that everybody does realize that they're not the same. Just because it's vegan doesn't mean that we should be using it. But in terms of like the whitening and bleaching ingredients, I have already, you know, received orders from Turkey, from Mali, from Dubai, from people ordering products from us internationally. And their reasoning was they love the clean ingredients and that they didn't contain whitening ingredients. And so I'm really hoping that globally we can really move away from the whole bleaching aspect of skincare, but I know that it will take a long time, and it's just something that's kind of just been,
yeah, you know, it's a culturally
a thing. Yeah.
You mentioned about the vegan and cruelty free, because when I had shared online, you know, to get some questions, and that was like a common thing, I think two or three people asked was, well, if I'm buying vegan and cruelty free, technically isn't that halal? So I get that, you know, if you use beeswax, then it's not vegan. But if I have a product and it says vegan, cruelty free and clean, because I know that there's a lot more transparency now with what goes into skincare and even makeup. When you go to like a beauty store, Sephora, Ulta, they have like their clean lines. And then, you know, we have the little like icons on the labels that allow us to know what's vegan, what's cruelty free. So if I buy something that's vegan, cruelty free, is that not technically halal? I know it's not halal certified, but what would be the thing that you would need to have in order for it to be halal certified beyond that?
So ethyl alcohol. So even though it's clean, it can still contain ethyl alcohols. And also the packaging and the materials cannot be sourced in a halal manner. I think the big thing is just that alcohol component to it. Any ingredients that contain ethyl alcohol, so a lot of extracts, we shouldn't be using. We can't use. And you'll see a lot of like extracts, especially like fruit extracts, and ingredients in which the process to create those, they had to use ethyl alcohol. And so it's to be halal, you cannot do that. And so though it is more difficult to make sure that your products are halal, it is completely worth it, because if you think about it, nobody wants products that have alcohol in them, truly, whether they're Muslim or not, because alcohol is very, very drying for your skin. And so though it may be easier in the process to create that, you know, extracts that we have in our products, not in ours but in others, it's not halal. So we do have a harder time formulating and sourcing ingredients, but it is definitely worth it in the end, because just beyond being halal, it's also just not overall great for your skin in terms of like the drying aspect. And then also, though a product may be vegan, some of the packaging and materials may not be vegan. Mm-hmm. And so that's another aspect to it. We have to make sure that all of our products are also conscious of the environment in totality. And also with collagen, right? So a lot of people are applying in products collagen topically to their face. Whereas if that collagen is coming from an animal or a human, that is not halal. So what we do is we add ingredients to our formulations that encourage and increase collagen production, that are not actually like collagen from an animal or a human, as that has actually been proven not to be effective anyway, because topically collagen from a human or animal would not effectively penetrate in our skin due to the size, but yet that is still huge marketing wise for many consumers. They like to hear that they're applying collagen like topically to their face. So we do not do that. Instead, we try to, you know, increase collagen production, because that is, you know, not halal to do. So it the other way,
the animal piece, is that just like with specific types of animals that would, because I'm super uneducated, by the way, on a lot of this. I think the most education I got was when we talked, but is it like specific, like for example, is it like pig material or ingredients derived from a pig, or is it any animal, or and is even human, like I don't know this.
Yeah, this is actually really interesting. So obviously when it comes to like consuming, like eating, right, like our thing, everybody knows it's like you don't eat pork, but skincare wise, no animals whatsoever. So except for, right, certain insects like beeswax, like that is okay. And obviously a lot of people know like honey is very important, not only culturally, but there have skincare. Like been many. Yeah. So skincare is different than consuming, like, eating meat, as it goes beyond pork, just for any animals in general. If any of your animals, if any of your ingredients are animal derived, you cannot use them on your skin.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Interesting. I feel like after this, I'm just going to be Googling and reading on all of this. I didn't know.
And also blood as well. So you cannot use skincare that does have blood, whether it's animal blood or human blood.
So wait, like PRP?
But you'd be so surprised. Like, some people might be listening to this and I'd be like, that's weird. Why would you be using blood anyway? But that's very, very common for, like, even in skincare treatments, like, people are using.
Yeah, like, blood. When they draw your blood and draw the plasma, and I know it's been used for, like, your hair, like, hair loss, it's used on skin. So is that technically not halal? I've honestly, like, I've never.
It is not halal to use animal or human blood topically, skincare, cosmetic-wise, at all.
Okay. By the way, just a side note, are you wearing AirPods?
I am.
Okay. Anytime you touch the hijab, it kind of mutes you.
Oh, really? Sorry.
No, it's fine. It was like very subtle, but just wanted to let you know so you could just be more conscious about it. Interesting. Now I'm really thinking about how ignorance is bliss, because I've considered doing that. I know where I go to, like, my esthetician, and she's always trying to talk me into doing that. And I, like, I'm interested in it. I don't know if, like, plasma is different than, like, actual blood. But one of the things I wanted to ask you about is...
If it's yours, I'm not sure if it's not okay or not. But it's not allowed to use other human or animal blood. If it's your own blood, that might be a different story.
Okay. We'll definitely have to look into that.
Yeah.
because, you know... And again, like with everything, you know, people can go online and ask their whoever they need to ask or look into things. But when you talked about the difference between the vegan cruelty-free, does cruelty-free, is that just animal testing, or does that include, because we talked about like packaging and sourcing and even like labor when you talk about a halal business. And I talked about this, oh man, I don't remember, was it last year? We were talking, it was a solo episode. I was talking to myself, but about halal business. Cause, you know, when we think halal business, we think, okay, you have a business that doesn't sell alcohol, that doesn't sell pork, that doesn't, you know, you utilize interest in its, you know, business model. But then I was talking about, like, well, what about beyond that? Like, just the ethical piece of, you know, paying people, you know, livable wages and, we have, obviously in the US, we have a lot of labor laws, or at least in California, I know we do, but how you treat your employees and making sure that you're not, like, you know, short selling them, or you're not taking advantage of them. And to me as a Muslim, like, if I had my own business, I would be conscious of that. So how does that play into, like, your business and how you envisioned, you know, being a halal certified company?
Well, we are a small team and we're a startup. So, you know, we don't have a lot of money, like huge salaries to give our employees quite yet until we complete, like, funding and fundraising. But actually our small team consists of family. So it actually consists of my cousins, my sister-in-law. So it is truly currently solely basically a family business.
Oh, that's amazing. But are you having to find that, like, you know, you're not looking necessarily for the cheapest way to source, you know, whatever you need in order, like, to manufacture or produce, but that you're trying to be more ethical about, you know, your practice?
Yeah, absolutely. That's, I would say, probably one of the most important things for us is, like, where we're sourcing the ingredients, how we're sourcing them. As even for, like, halal certification, it goes down to literally the sourcing, what, where, and who of the exact ingredients. So for a lot of skincare brands, right, they're using ingredients they have no idea where they're coming from, but they were able to, you know, buy them from a large company or corporation. They really don't need to know, like, the minuscule details of everything. But for us, we do. It's extremely important, especially being, like, halal certified. And so we try to source ingredients that are completely made ethically. And actually, most of our ingredients are actually homegrown, made actually in the US.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. And of course, we do use some ingredients that are sourced internationally, which we're really proud of, because it's also a part of our cultural aspect, I guess you could say, of our brand. For example, like with our Rose Renewal collection, our main hero ingredient that everybody is obsessed with is the Egyptian rose petals. And those are actually sourced in Egypt. And obviously that's really important to us, right? Because we have family in Egypt, and you know, that's definitely like a fan favorite collection. And people like to see like the real Egyptian rose petals like floating in their toner. It's absolutely gorgeous. But yes, we make sure that all of our ingredients are sourced ethically, and that we know where they're sourced from. We can go to where they're sourced from. And so for every single ingredient that we have in our formulations, we're able to actually go physically see it, see the practice and how it's done, and be able to feel proud and good about it.
I recorded an episode last week, which by the time this drops, that episode would have dropped. It was supposed to drop today, but I think it'll go out in the next couple of days. And it was with a friend of mine who started a business, and it is there's a lot to the story, but it is artisan goods. Like, I don't know if you like the incense, the frankincense, and we call it bahur, and that she's sourcing from Yemen, that is handmade by women in Yemen, as well as like all the tools that you would need for it. And so she's really trying to keep alive like the handmade artisan goods from Yemeni people, because a lot of things now are being outsourced to like China and being mass produced, and really taking away from, I think, the beautiful work that goes into handmade items. And her whole, like even her packaging, and it's all an experience, right? But you can see that there was a lot of thought that went into it. And when you talk to her about her products, similar to what you were saying, like, you know where these things come from. Mm-hmm. And as a producer, you can talk about who made it, or where did it come from, or you know, what does that process look like in harvesting it, or you know, processing or whatever it is. And mm-hmm. I think that sometimes we get lost in the mass production part of, you know, being a consumer, fast fashion, obviously like skincare, any type of products that we use. Because we're just looking for one, something that's probably cheap and quick. But what difficulties have you faced in your business being and putting in the extra effort to make sure that you have like a clean line and a line that's sourced ethically, as opposed to if you were just to, I don't know, get cheap ingredients or get ingredients through a third party? Like, what difficulties did you face there?
Honestly, I would say cost and time. It is very costly to source ingredients, unfortunately, in the most ethical manner. And that's why people are doing so cheaply. It is also very costly to have environmentally, you know, conscious and good for the environment, or less harmful for the environment, packaging that's reusable and recyclable that we do have. It's more expensive. And it's more time consuming to be able to source and find these different ingredients and materials to do so. So I would just say the time that it takes to do it, and the cost that it takes to do it. But as like a business owner, you have to prioritize and make decisions as like what is important to you. For example, you know, like a lot of brands are not able to sell in China because China has certain rules where all cosmetics products or all skincare products need to be, you know, tested by animals. Mm-hmm. And so though we are an international and global brand and would, you know, love to sell everywhere, right? You have to just make certain decisions, like what is most important to you, and what's most important to us is truly that we are consciously creating products that everyone can use. And the consciously creating is very, very important. And so that does take more money, which is hard as a, you know, startup and a newer business, because we don't have the same funding as everybody else. But it's very, very important to us. So I would say cost and time.
And what about the cost, or cost and time associated with educating people? Because I feel like you are competing with super accessible, super cheap, you know, the quick stuff. And like, you know, the ones that you go to a store and you just see like so much of it, right? And these are like really huge companies that usually are often like owned by the really big companies, right? Like Procter & Gamble and whatever else is out there. But how do you get people to, one, listen, right? Mm-hmm. Learn about this new, I wouldn't say it's a new practice, but like an unfamiliar practice of being halal certified. Because I mean, at one point, no one knew what cruelty-free or vegan was. And then yeah. PETA and like, you know, people raised awareness and suddenly people were like, I feel a little bad about, you know, purchasing these things when I see what they're doing to animals. But that takes a lot of money and a lot of time. And like you said, you're only one small business and there's not a lot of halal businesses here. So how do you do that to make sure that like you can thrive and live and that you have customers? Because why, I don't mean to say this in a negative tone, but like, how do you convince someone like, don't buy that, but buy from us, you know?
Yeah. Honestly, it's very, very difficult, but I think the same way that like K-beauty, Korean beauty, like emerged with a force here, is very similar to what we're trying to do. And it's important for us to educate everybody that, you know, though this is a requirement for Muslims, it's absolutely beneficial for everybody. Because I think it's time that we actually start moving beyond vegan and cruelty-free. Because now that's almost like a standard, right? Like retailers aren't really looking for brands that aren't vegan and cruelty-free anymore. That's almost like the standard. And so we're beyond that. We're moving beyond that. And we're trying to show that like also inclusivity goes beyond skin complexions. And for me, especially, I feel like I'm the first one to really understand that, because it's hard for me to find products that, you know, really do target the skin concerns of those with melanin-rich skin. But then on top of that, I have to try to find also products that like are halal. So they're so, it's incredibly difficult for me alone. And so I just think there's so many layers to what people can and cannot use that I think that our brand is amazing for everybody, because every single person can feel proud to use our brand. We even have formulations that are kosher, and though we're not kosher certified, the goal is to be absolutely inclusive of everybody. Now, of course, right, selfishly, I tackle my needs first, right? I tackle the vitamin C collection, and it being able to address the concerns with melanin-rich skin. Of course, I address the need for halal skincare, because that's specifically important to me. But the brand is absolutely inclusive of everyone. And so the educational component to it is to really just also teach people that though it is a need for us, it's amazing for you too, because our products don't contain alcohol, meaning that it's less drying for your skin. All of our products are sourced ethically. All of our products are made out of botanical innovation. So instead of salicylic acid, right, we use the natural variation, which is willow bark powder. We really, truly do have, in totality, inclusive and high quality ingredients that every single person should want to use. And so I think the same way that, you know, everybody is using K-beauty, whether they're Korean or not, right? Because we're like, that's so cool. I love, you know, like the cultural aspect, the benefits of all of these ingredients that we weren't really using here in the US before. And I think our products really tackle the same exact thing. And I'm hoping that we will in the future be the pioneers of halal beauty in the US. The same way, for example, like Glow Recipe is the pioneers of K-beauty in the US, and that, you know, people will start, you know, doing trends on TikTok or whatever using our products as well, and that everyone will be like, yes, this is not a niche, this benefits every single person. And I'm glad that, you know, I got on board and jumped upon the halal beauty train. So
yeah, and I think the idea of halal has become a lot more common in the US. I mean, it's common in other parts of the world, but we don't go to restaurants and find halal options for mm-hmm. meat. And it's starting. I don't know about restaurants, unless it's like a Muslim owned restaurant, but like,
yeah,
I know that I can go into like Costco now and they have halal options for people to purchase. So, you know, I think that there's definitely a trend moving forward. If we show people that there is a need, right? Like mm-hmm. The way that capitalism works is if people say we need it, they will find a way to provide it. My only concern or question would be, or like, if this is a concern for you, is, when we talk about representation, which I think we saw this in the modest fashion industry, is we want people to be inclusive, right? And we want to be represented as Muslim women in modest wear, whether it's with hijab or without hijab. But, you know, I like to support Muslim owned businesses that, you know, cater to our needs. And then when you see large companies like, you know, Gap and Macy's, and actually, well, I think Macy's like actually opened a collection that was like through a Muslim owned brand, but Nike, for example, creating the hijab, and it in one sense, you're like, oh, that's cool. Like now they're finally, I can buy Nike and it can be a hijab. But at the same time, it's like, why would I spend so much money to benefit a large corporation when there are small businesses and other Muslim owned brands mm-hmm. that have created it, and it might not be as cool because it's not Nike. So yeah. Do you worry about if this picks up, right, this halal trend, and that it's more inclusive of like a lot of different things, that these larger brands would start incorporating it, and then ultimately, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? They would ultimately dominate in the skincare world.
That's a really, really good question, actually. So at the end of the day, right, like my goal of all of this is to make halal skincare more inclusive and, I mean, more accessible to everyone, right? The goal is to make halal skincare more accessible to everyone. So if other brands want to incorporate halal skincare and do so, I welcome that, because that means that we have more access to halal skincare and halal products. I think that, you know, we're one of the first to do it, to have actually like halal certified skincare based in the US. And I think our goal is to really just spread brand awareness so that, you know, people do know us as the pioneers of it. And like I said, I am obsessed with Glow Recipe, and I just love like their trajectory and their story. And now all of us know about K-beauty, right? We know a ton of different K-beauty brands, but I think like at the end of the day, I think most people, at least a lot of people, know that the first kind of K-beauty brand that they heard was Glow Recipe, or that's the maybe like the easiest name when they think of K-beauty to come up with at the top of their head. And though there's other brands that are maybe larger and bigger, which there definitely are, and more accessible everywhere, right? Because Glow Recipe is exclusive to only Sephora. I think globally, we know that Glow Recipe were the pioneers of such, at least in making it a big thing in the US. And so we do hope to, you know, contribute the same, honestly. But at the end of the day, I'm not selfish in that I want to keep all of the, you know, consumers of halal beauty to myself. I do want it to be more accessible to everyone. So my goal is, as fast as possible, get all of our products on the shelves, accessible to everyone, so everyone knows, like, you know, we were here. Yeah. And then we don't get completely lost and maybe any of the brands taking it on. But I will say that, you know, a lot of larger brands and corporations right now are already using like Muslim influencers and models for skincare and cosmetics, and not incorporating Halal formulations in their catalog.
I don't even think those models, and ambassadors or people that they sponsor, I don't even think they know that halal certified skincare is a thing. I'm telling you, I don't even know. Like, I myself was, or it still is, I don't know much about it. I think what you're saying is, it's, you know, that speaks a lot to the type of person you are, which I think is amazing. But at the same time, I feel like as a Muslim woman myself, I would want to see like my fellow Muslim sister thriving. And I wouldn't want some company, like, of course we want things to be accessible, but why can't we just build the person who is at the forefront of it up rather than, cause that's right. That's what happens. It's like, we can do something. And then these big companies with their money and their resources can, like, if, you know, CeraVe or any brand, you know, right now, it was like, I want to make halal, they could do it and turn around in like a few months, you know? And it's sad though, that they could do that. And yeah, then that's great that as Muslims, we have halal products, but also as Muslims, we should want to support the Muslims already doing the work and not letting them get squashed. So it's not the easiest thing. And I'll be honest, I'm not like the best at this, but I do try to be intentional in the sense of like, you know, if it's cheaper, what's a few more dollars? And, you know, obviously maybe I come from that sounds a little privileged that I could say something like that, but also, like at the very least you can share, you can educate, you can use your platforms to, you know, raise awareness about certain things. But I don't know, it would just be really sad that like after all this work that you would put into something, some big company is going to come and be like, well, we're catering to Muslims. Yeah. And when we do so, they're not excluding anyone, right? And I think that's what you meant, is like, you can have a halal certified and maybe you exclude the extreme vegans who don't want to use beeswax, but you don't really exclude anyone because it's still cruelty free and it's still no animal product. So I just wanted to say that.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Yeah, I mean, actually, we don't use beeswax to be inclusive to everyone. No, we definitely can, right? And still be halal certified. Oh, okay. Yeah, we don't. I'm just being inclusive of everybody. But that is why, like you said, I think it's extremely important, right, that my own community, like our own community, like supports us and really makes our brand important and spreads brand awareness first. And I think, I don't know, I feel like everybody says these things, right? You eat at a restaurant, right? It may be like a type of restaurant from not where you're from, right? So let's say I went to like an Indian restaurant, and you know that the Indian restaurant must be good because you've heard all of your Indian friends say that this Indian restaurant is really, really good. And so I think it's very, very important that as Muslims, we're supporting other Muslim brands, and that we do have support from our community first, and that we have a lot of support from our community first, because other people who are not from our community will want to use our products and will want to say, hey, what's going on over there? Like, why are all of these people really into this brand? What's the secret? I want to use it too. And I know that it is a amazing halal beauty brand to use, because I know all of the Muslims that I know are using it. And so I think the same thing like with other K-beauty brands too, is that their communities were aligned and heavily supporting them first, before the rest of the world jumped on the bandwagon. And so I think it's extremely important that your own community definitely supports you first, because I think others will feel more confident in using the products as well.
Yeah, I agree. So I think that's just like such an important piece to, I guess, that question and that thought, because I don't know, I think it's a pretty contentious like conversation, this whole idea of like representation, how much representation, because for years we said we want to see ourselves on these things. And now that we do, people are like, well, I don't need to see a Muslim or a hijabi on the front of a magazine to feel validated. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I thought we did. you know, to an extent, like I remember when Halima was on the cover of, I think it was Allure, you know, I gave the magazine to my niece. She was super excited because, you know, I used to walk through Barnes and Noble or like the grocery store, see all of these magazines, and all the girls were primarily Caucasian, right? And mm-hmm. it was, you know, you just didn't see yourself. And now you do see it, but I get it. There is sometimes like an objectification of Muslim women nowadays. And it's almost like a high market because they know the Muslim fashion industry and like the way, like they know that we're consumers, like we're a big place to tap into. So I'm like, is it the intention there or is it more like, let's take advantage of this opportunity? So it's a hit or miss. Like I don't.
Yeah. Sometimes and I think especially with beauty and makeup, because I think they know that like Muslim influencers, in my opinion, dominate the beauty and makeup categories on TikTok, Instagram, etc. Mm-hmm. They know that whether they're Muslim or not, they have everybody wanting to get advice, beauty advice and cosmetics advice from us.
We're a strong community.
Exactly. And even it's funny, literally 15 minutes down the street, there's an Ulta store with a Muslim woman, of course, on the windows. And she's black too. She looks like me. It looks like I just drove past myself. And it's so funny because it's like, you know, inshallah, soon we will be, you know, at Ulta. But for right now, I'm just like, it's just interesting because, you know, from what I know, you know, Ulta yet does not have a huge, you know, halal beauty,
yeah,
you know, sector in the store. But it's just interesting that our faces are often used for diversity and inclusion a lot.
Yeah. That's seen a lot in companies that want to be diverse and inclusive. And I think there's like this image that describes it very well, but it's like, if the bottom of your, you know, like your employees at the bottom are your most diverse, that's not what we mean by being inclusive. It needs to also be representative at the top. And so mm-hmm. when you have these brands who utilize Muslim models, it's also being inclusive of Muslim creators and, you know, like yourself, who produce products that could actually be sold at those stores. So taking it, I think, to the next level. But it's, like I said, it's not an easy thing to, at least for myself, to wrap my mind around it, feel one way or the other. I go into the comment section sometimes and I'm like, that's a good point. You're right. And then I go down and I'm like, actually, maybe not. And it's a back and forth, but can you walk us through your products? I know you have some pictures behind you. And then you mentioned something earlier that I thought was interesting, because again, I want to take opportunities to get educated. Like your vitamin C, and you were talking about you were trying to produce something that like you could benefit from as a Black woman. Like what are some things that women of color or Black women of color are, I guess, having to look for or aren't being accommodated for in the skincare industry?
So I would say definitely hyperpigmentation, melasma, you know, and also this is, oh my goodness, this is truly a pain point, is products that aren't leaving like white cast mm-hmm. or
sunscreen and does that.
Exactly. And a lot of people don't realize like it goes beyond sunscreen. There are so many moisturizers that you literally have to keep doing this for like 10, 15, 20 minutes to just like fully absorb into your skin. So it doesn't leave like an ashy or a white cast look. And so these are all difficulties that I just feel like in general, women of darker complexions have to deal with. I would say especially like after a breakout or acne, and then you're left with hyperpigmentation or dark spots. And a lot of times you'll hear women of darker complexion say, like, I don't need sunscreen, or I don't need to use sunscreen because of my melanin, it protects from the sun. It's wild, crazy things. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know, like, what this thing is that, like, clearly, like, people have been telling us for years, but that's not true. Like, we absolutely need sunscreen. We need to apply it the same way everybody else applies it, even
and in the indoors. Winter. Yeah. And yes. I didn't know that. I was guilty of that. I was like, if there's no sun, there's no UV rays. I know.
You're not the only one. Like, I've been guilty before too. And then it's just like, you learn along the way, you know, you learn along the way. And I feel like now, I think we should all know now that we all need sunscreen. Sunscreen benefits all of us. And obviously there are different types of sunscreen, from chemical to mineral. But I just think, you know, there's so many things that are lacking in formulations today that just people are not considering those of, you know, darker skin complexions. They're like, okay, this formulation, it tackled this, this, and this. I don't care what it looks like on another person's skin. Because a lot of times when they're, you know, doing like clinical evaluations and testing and trying things on others, the people that they're trying it on are not diverse. So they're not truly getting to see, this is the outcome on people of darker complexions. This is what it looks like on people of darker complexions, because they're not using like the samples and they're not clinically evaluating it on diverse populations. And even I've heard even non, you know, POC people of darker, of non-dark complexions even talk about how in school, like in beauty and cosmetology school, they were not taught or learned anything about women of darker complexions. And then they get out of school and they have clients who are of darker complexions and they have no idea what to do, because they're just like, oh, we didn't learn that. We didn't know that. No, that wasn't in our books. Nobody addressed it. And so what we try to do selfishly, of course, because this is like, the vitamin C collection is the second collection I created outside of the oatmeal and shea body butter and the sugar scrub that I created based on my son's eczema. And so this collection tackles hyperpigmentation, melasma, dark spots, anti-aging with vitamin C, niacinamide, licorice root, aloe, and other ingredients that really do work to protect against free radicals from the sun and decrease hyperpigmentation and inflammation.
And so you, when you're talking about like different lines, did you come out originally like with one product first, and are you building up?
Yes. So we are continuing to grow and build our catalog. Our first products were the oatmeal and shea body butter and the shea sugar scrub. Those were the first two products we ever had. And those were actually inspired by my son's eczema therapy, because my son has eczema. He's 3 now. But I could not find products that were like truly clean and didn't have like glycerins that were, you know, pork derived or animal derived and all of these other different ingredients that I could use on him that would actually, you know, work. And of course I did find things that people would recommend that were natural and clean for eczema, but again, they didn't work. And so I decided to create and formulate something on my own based upon my background and the knowledge that I had that would be efficacious in actually getting rid of his eczema. And obviously not permanently. Eczema is a chronic skin condition, so, you know, there are flare-ups. But we do actively work to maintain it. And the oatmeal and shea body butter that I created finally did that. And so it's actually really funny. I get like emails and messages all the time from people, especially on Amazon, because on Amazon, that product is like runs out of stock a lot. It is one of our most popular products on Amazon. It's actually an Amazon bestseller. And people will say, when is this going out of stock? Like, if you have any more, like in the warehouse, I'll buy 10 of them right now because I'm getting a flare up and I need this. I'm like, it just makes me feel so good that the products are, you know, really working for people to the point that they're like, I need to email them and make sure that I have everything that I need, because it just, I don't know, it just puts a smile on my face to just see, you know,
the results of,
yeah.
So that's a beautiful thing.
After that, then I created the vitamin C collection. I said, okay, we've tackled my son's issues. Now, selfishly, I'm going to tackle my own now. Mm-hmm. I did that with the vitamin C collection. And basically, I've formulated it with ingredients that all work together to make sure that, you know, with vitamin C, niacinamide, licorice root, aloe, that we're tackling the hyperpigmentation and inflammation. But a lot of times when you're using ingredients and when you're tackling these sorts of skin concerns, a lot of times your skin will also be dry. So you're like actively, you know, tackling something, but then there's another side effect to it where, you know, something's being left out. So for our Bright Side serum, it's formulated with vitamin C, but also hyaluronic acid, because I noticed, you know, working at Johnson & Johnson and Allergan, a lot of vitamin C products are very, very drying on the skin. And so I made sure to formulate it with hyaluronic acid, which is amazing at hydrating your skin.
It's really refreshing to hear someone talk about something and they actually know more, you know, about it than just because, you know, and nothing wrong with people who start businesses and stuff, but a lot of, especially like online influencers, you know, they just hire different people to do something. I think they have the creative idea behind it, but not necessarily the expertise in the creation of it. So what's, because we're going to close out shortly. And of course I'll give you an opportunity to, we can talk about anything else that you want to talk about, but what is coming in the future for Flora and Noor, and what are you most excited about?
Yeah. So I'm most excited about launching two new products, which are our Mother Earth facial oil. So we don't have a facial oil in our catalog yet. We have cleansers, toners, serums, moisturizers, and body products, but we don't yet have a facial oil. So I'm really excited for the Mother Earth facial oil. And actually, we plan on having like an exclusive launch weekend event that I'd actually love you to come to, because we plan on having it in Joshua Tree, which I don't know how close you are, but if you're in California, it's definitely, you know, closer than where I am.
Yeah, let me know.
And then we're also excited about launching another body butter and scrub called, sorry that I'm laughing, but I just really hope that you get it. It's called Acai You. And it is a
cute
body scrub and body butter with
acai. That's very cute. I'm sure that smells amazing.
Oh my gosh, it smells divine. I cannot even talk about it without laughing when I say the name, because when I first like told my husband, he was like, nobody's gonna get that, like I don't get that, you had to tell it to me three times.
No, it was super easy to get. That's just him. Sorry.
Thank you. And then we also plan at the end of the year, all of our products are made in collections, right? And they also come in skincare subscriptions where everybody can purchase a regimen or collection that, you know, matches their skincare goals and concerns, and it'll get delivered to them every month. And all of our products are in a collection except for one product, which is our Hydration Station Cleanser, which has salicylic acid and MSM to really tackle acne. So it has aloe, green tea, shea, salicylic acid, and MSM. And it's really amazing for people who are struggling with acne, but who also have sensitive skin. And so a lot of times, if you have acne, it's very hard to find, you know, products that are also gentle on your skin, but, you know, that can, you know, treat your acne. And so we've created this cleanser that everybody loves, but it's not in a full collection yet. So we will be having the serum, the toner, and the moisturizer for it launched by the end of the year.
I mean, best of luck, inshallah. That sounds amazing. And then what are your like long-term goals, or what would you like to see, or where would you like to see Flora and Noor?
I would really love to see us at Target. I would really love to see us at Ulta, Sephora. I really want to make sure that we're easily like accessible for everyone. So even like drugstores, like Walgreens and CVS, I'd love to see some products there as well. I think right now we're obviously, you know, really tackling like e-commerce side of things. But I want to also make sure that we also do have a large and accessible retail footprint. And so that's really my, you know, goal right now is to make sure that we have, you know, fully scaled to, you know, be an accessible retail for everyone.
And so currently right now, where can people find the products if they're interested?
So people can find us on our website, florinoor.com. Also Amazon, Beauty Bridge, Verishop, the Allure store, which is online, but also they have a physical retail store in Soho, New York. And we are there. So you can shop from us there. They also, the Allure store also does like live shopping. So you can find us, you can find us like at live shopping events. And also recently we did a pitch competition in which we will now be available at the Girl Boss Marketplace. So anybody who follows like the Girl Boss Instagram or who's really familiar with that platform, they also do have a online marketplace with their, you know, favorite brands. And it's not just beauty. They also have like fashion and home and office brands.
Like lifestyle stuff.
So many different things.
Yeah.
And so you can find us also on the Girl Boss Marketplace as well.
And Walmart.com.
Oh, yes, of course. And yes, and of course, and you can find us on Walmart.com. I would say it's so hard.
You listed a lot of things.
I would say probably, I think most of our consumers shop from our website, from Amazon, from Beauty Bridge, and Walmart.
Perfect.
But inshallah.
Yes.
Ulta soon.
Yes.
Inshallah. I can't wait.
That would be, I think, such a huge leap, right? Like, Ulta, Sephora, or Target. Who doesn't love Target?
Yeah.
Target is and therapy. Then,
right? Especially, like, you know, we already talked about how now Ulta is moving to all of the Target stores. And it's already in some of the Target stores. For example, like my cousin, she lives in Minneapolis. I don't know. We're going to leave that alone.
Minneapolis?
But she lives, yes.
Tentister.
Which is like the Target headquarters. Mm-hmm. And so the Ulta stores, you know, obviously already in those Target stores. And it's absolutely amazing. It's right across from the Starbucks section. So basically you'll get stuck in Target for half a day.
I just heard all the men weeping in the world because their wives and you know, daughters or whoever is just going to be stuck, you know?
What are you going to do?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Go to Target.
Exactly.
So to close off, I have a few questions, but before I do that, is there anything else that we didn't talk about that you wanted to talk about or highlight?
I would just say, please follow us at florinoor.com on Instagram, our website, of course, and just, you know, be engaged, stay involved. Like, you know, because we are a startup, we have so many like new events, new launches, mm-hmm. new things happening all of the time. So there's so many interesting things that are going on with us. So please follow us and stay in touch. And then also on May 28th, if you're in New York, we have a huge event at the Allure store. So I'd love for everybody to come. It's from 12 to 2 on May 28th.
Great. And I will add the website link in your Instagram and social media as well in the show notes.
Thank you so much.
Of course. So I always end all of my podcasts with pretty much the same questions to all of my guests. Cause I feel like, you know, some of them are kind of deep, but not really. But obviously all of my guests or most of my guests are Muslim women. And I love to show how more similar we are than different, regardless of our backgrounds and where we grew up or, you know, who we grew up with. So first question is, what is the best advice you've received, just in life or maybe in business, but what would you say is one of your best advices? And, you know, take your time. This is edited. So if you need a minute to like think about it, please
do. Actually, so. I immediately would say my mom always tells me, like, she always told me, she still does like remind me all the time, but like the worst thing that somebody can tell you is no. And if they say no, then nothing different happened. You're still in the same place. So you might as well just ask for what you want.
True. I love that.
And I think that has taken me a very, very long way. because I feel like definitely in this business, you really just have to ask for what you want.
And the fear sometimes can really hold you back.
Yeah. And a lot of times you get like imposter syndrome where you feel like, I don't belong in this space. I don't belong, you know, talking to these people. I feel, you know, but you belong there. You know, we belong wherever we want to be and wherever we feel like we belong and wherever we are, we deserve to be there.
Yeah.
And so,
and if you don't feel like you belong, I always think if you feel like you're so different that you question your space in that area, it means that you need to be there even more, you know?
I agree.
So you, that's even more reason to be like, no, I'm going to force myself into the situation. Because the reason we feel that way oftentimes is because there isn't people like us in that space. And, you know, it's a whole problem in itself. Your favorite quote you live by?
Oh, this is going to be hard.
I know. As soon as people ask me stuff like this, it's like I draw a blank. I'm like, what's a quote I like? To be or not to be? I don't know.
I cannot think of one right now. I don't know. Okay.
We can either come back to it or we can skip that question. What about book? I'm not much of a reader, but is there a book or maybe it's a show? It could be reality TV, whatever. But like, what's something that you've been consuming nowadays?
Okay. I have two things. I have a book and I have a show.
Okay.
Okay. So my book is, people might laugh at this, but my favorite book of all time is Animal Farm.
Is that a children's book?
It actually sounds like a children's book, but it's not.
Oh, okay.
it's about animals, and it's actually like a philosophical and political book. And it's so interesting because when you first read the book, you might not get that initially. And the more you read, the further along you get, you're like, wow, this is really deep. Like, and it's about animals. It's so amazing. So amazing. So that is my favorite book of all time. And I actually read that book in high school. And I have not forgotten it or its messaging yet since. So if you're into like politics and philosophy,
I am.
You would really love that. Yeah. I think it's written by George Orwell, and I could be wrong, but I think it is. And then my favorite show right now, actually, let me pull it up. It's on, it's actually a Ramadan series right now.
Is it on YouTube?
It's not on YouTube. You know what? I was going to tell you one, but I'm going to tell you another one. You can watch it on Netflix. One season of it is on Netflix, and then the rest of the seasons, if you want like the English translation or Turkish translation or any other translations, then you will have to watch it on Shahid, you know, the app.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have to watch it on there. And it was originally a Ramadan series, but now they have one season on Netflix, and it's like, I think it's 6 seasons, and it's so good. And it's called Al-Hayba.
Oh, I started watching it.
Did you start watching it on Netflix or Shahid?
On Netflix, but I'm barely on the, like, how far did I make it? The girl went to her husband's family for the burial. She's been there for some time. Sticks out like a sore thumb, that type of thing. Right? Is it the one where she lived in the US or Canada and her husband passes away and she has to go back to Lebanon?
Yeah.
Lebanon, yeah.
So it's, okay, so this is the one that's on Netflix, right? You said?
Yes.
And for all of the other seasons, there's so many more seasons. you can watch them on the Shahid app. And like, it's all of the other seasons are actually so much better than the one on Netflix, even though the one on Netflix got me so addicted. I was like, I have to watch all of the other seasons. But all the other seasons go back to before everything that happened on the Netflix season.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll definitely look into it. But I was like a few episodes in, and with Ramadan, I haven't had the time to like watch anything. So I'm gonna have to pick that one back up. What's your favorite self-care practice, routine, product? How do you practice self-care, or what's your favorite go-to?
I would say my favorite self-care activity is binge watching a show while giving myself, my daughter, or my husband a facial.
All three.
Yeah. One time we did all four with also my son, who at the time was like two, and that was a hot mess. But it was fun, but it was so messy afterwards. I was like, okay, we're never involving a 2 year old again. Yeah. I think
he needs to be of age, whatever that age is, but he needs to be of age.
And then, you know, when you like slice the cucumbers, mm-hmm. he kept eating them. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, he doesn't get it. That's super cute. And then the last thing is, if you could give your younger self advice, what would it be?
Don't be afraid to be where you feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. I think that like really aligns with all the other stuff we talked about, right? Like imposter syndrome, saying, you know, asking, always asking, even if the, you know, what's the worst that they can say? No.
Even to like, you know, like applying for jobs and, you know, interviewing for different things. It's like, sometimes you feel like, why did they ask me, or why do I truly like belong here? But it's like, no, you do. And, you know, sometimes insecurities, you know, and I feel like a lot of times, like being a triple minority, there's so many different spaces where I feel so uncomfortable that I just have to just like, and it's like, do I feel uncomfortable because of myself, or do I feel uncomfortable because of others? Like, what is truly the reason that I feel uncomfortable? And sometimes, a lot of times it's both. And a lot of times it's you. Like, it could definitely, like a lot of times I have felt,
And it's overcoming that. But I think it's a lot of unlearning that we have to do, and the way we've been conditioned growing up, or our experiences, or us seeing other people that look like us experience things. And so it really does impact how we feel about ourselves. I think we internalize it a lot. But like for me, one of my biggest things that I struggled with was like public speaking. And it I'm not talking about like on a stage in front of people, which that terrified me as well. But even just in class, like if we're doing popcorn reading, I'm like, don't pick me. You know, like you're so scared to even, and you feel like so much attention is put on you. No one is even paying attention the way that you think that they are. You walk into a room, most people aren't even looking at you, but you feel like, you know, in the movies, like everyone just stops and everyone's eyes are on you, and they're exact, like, it's not like that. And I've always wanted to be more outspoken, but I couldn't be. And so I had to learn, like you said, put myself in uncomfortable situations, because I knew that in order to be a better public speaker or comfortable speaking to people I've never met before, or like now I have a podcast and I speak to people I've, you know, don't meet, is I had to actually go through those uncomfortable moments where I did mess up. I did stutter. I used to sound, my voice would crack. I'd sound like I was crying. So many experiences that were very horrible. And I feel awful afterwards, because I'm like, oh my God, like I never want to do that again. But with each experience, it built up a little bit more confidence and like removed some of the fear. So I love that you mentioned that. So yeah, but thank you so much for taking your, you know, time out of your day. This was like super helpful for me to learn. And obviously I wish you the best of luck with everything. Follow Flora and Noor online on Instagram, social media, so you can see what the latest updates are. And I'll have all your information, inshallah, in the show notes, so that people can easily access like where to buy and where to follow.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Of course. It was such a pleasure meeting you. Yes. I know.